I am joined by Megs Fitzgerald, a Canadian graphic novelist. Which do you prefer, graphic novelist or cartoonist?
I prefer graphic novelists, even though I know it's the snobbier term to enjoy. It's more accurate because I love cartooning and cartoonists, but there's a difference between what I do and what cartoonists do. And I have not mastered the art form of cartooning, but I think I have a decent grasp on graphic noveling.
And you did not ease into graphic noveling.
Yes, the
Now,
verb graphic novel.
you went from almost zero to 60. What comics work had you done prior to launching into Photo Booth and Autobiography is the name of your book, which you probably know, but my listeners don't.
Yes. I had kind of dabbled and tried a few pages here or there and experimented with things myself. But the only official comics project I had ever done was a one-page comic for Gitch magazine, and that was in 2012. So I went from one page of finished artwork to a 280-page book. So it was quite the leap.
Storytelling, just from what I've been able to gather, the storytelling is slightly different to go from a one-page work to a 280-page
Yes, it turns out.
The requirements of the narrative are a bit,
The arc goes for much longer. I had done really large scale projects before that weren't comics related, that were related to my fine art practice. And I also have a background in theater, and so I felt really comfortable with narrative in general and how to tell a story. So I had a hunch that I would be able to do it. But I think I was incredibly naive when I started the process, but it was that naivete that kind of carried me through the whole thing. If someone had told me it would be that hard when I started, I'm not sure if I ever would have started. So I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I didn't know how difficult it would be.
So many great works of creativity start with that. If someone had told me that it was going to be that hard, existed at all. So, I give the elevator pitch of Photo Booth and Autobiography.
I have to stop and correct you, though. It's Photo Booth, a biography.
A biography.
Yeah, not Photo Booth, an autobiography.
But
It's sort of a play on words.
all right.
Yeah. Which I can explain if you want to, but I'll let you finish the
Why
thought
don't
you were
we?
going.
Well, I let's start there with because clearly my reading comprehension skills are weak. So why Photo Booth, a biography?
Well, I didn't really want to personify photo booths, the machines themselves, to be as human-like as possible because I have formed really human-like relationships to these machines. And I think that each one has their own personality and has their own story and has their own history. And I didn't want to call the book Photo Booth a history because it is a lot more than that. It is really the story is told with a lot of emotion and whether that be the emotion of sort of imbued onto these machines or whether that be the emotion of the technicians and the owners and these photo collectors. There's a lot of humanness, I think, in this story. So it is sort of suggestive that it's not a biography because, of course, it's my own story as well, but I think of it actually being a biography of the machines.
And that's probably where my mind has filled in this blank that did not need to be filled in, is that so much of reading Photo Booth is there's the history, there's the cultural part of what the photo booth meant, but really you're using your own life as part of the lens of how you're talking about this. How did you find that balance of the history and then how much of your own story you wanted to tell?
Well, I think if I had it entirely my way, I probably would have told actually less of my own story. But as I got feedback from my publisher and from my friends, I realized that telling more of my story was critical to making the book appealing to readers who didn't already care about photo booths, which would be the majority of readers. So I sort of had to reevaluate my comfort zone and decide how much I wanted to share about myself and how much of my own life story, because the book covers about 10 years of my life. And in the end, I feel really comfortable with what I've shared and the feedback and the response to it. Nothing negative whatsoever has come from sharing what I shared. So, I think there was some pages that I sat down to write, and ultimately I just felt too uncomfortable sharing that information, so I cut it. So I guess the way I negotiated a personal how personal to go was just sort of like a gut instinct. But having said that, now knowing the book's been received positively, I actually would probably go back in time and put in those pages that made me slightly uncomfortable to write, because I actually probably would have made it a slightly better book.
Well, it's not too early to start planning the expanded 20th anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. The 25-year anniversary or something. Add those pages in. No, I think actually there's I plan to do a lot more comics projects in the future, and so if I want to tell those other little snippets that I wasn't brave enough to tell the first time, I can find a way to sneak them into future projects.
Well, and we had a chance to meet in person briefly at WordFest, which is a Calgary book festival. One of the things that I brought to you there was how much your work reminded me of Seth, who is a great Canadian creator, but also does that weaving in some of his own story and when he's telling some of his tales. So who were the influences on you? Like, I mean, to have gone into that big a work, you had to have looked at other people's to see kind of how to even start that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would definitely cite Seth as an inspiration in terms of content, because he really is heavily nostalgic in the same way that I am. Not so much in drawing style. He has such a wonderful, distinctive style that would be hard to emulate. The person who probably had the most influence on the book is actually Craig Thompson. So his book, Blankets, of course, is sort of this giant tome of a book, which Photo Booth Biography has nothing on that, but is still a sizable book in its own way. And he was a big influence because he doesn't use traditional paneling. And like I said at the start, actually, I'm not a trained cartoonist, and telling a story sort of panel by panel like that felt really unnatural to me. And so I sort of invented my book. I really felt like I had permission to break out of a grid system and kind of have a more flowy approach to the material. So there's no pages in the book that have the same composition. For every page, I've tailored the composition based around the content and how I want the reader to feel reading that page. So that's very much something that I borrowed from Craig's books.
And Blankets actually is on the shelf above where Photo Booth is, so it's about 3 inches away on the shelf. So
That's good. That pleases me to know. It's funny that I could be, right beside someone so great, on the bookshelf.
so obviously comics is an art form that is, as a business, in transition. When you were starting to try to sell this work, how far along were you when you started talking to publishers? How did you look at it as maybe serializing at first? Anything like that?
Well, it's funny that you asked me this, because my teacher maybe doesn't want me to answer honestly. So my publisher is Conundrum Press, and that's ran by Andy Brown. And Andy is wonderful in so many ways, and he really trusted me to do what I needed to do for this project. So a lot of publishers don't want to sign you until your book is essentially finished. Which makes sense, I think, within the fiction and nonfiction world, but doesn't make as much sense with comics, because it does take so long to produce the actual finished artwork that you need in advance to help you do that. And so I had written an extremely detailed outline. My outline was, I think, around like 25,000 words. which is actually probably more text than what's actually in the book in the end. But so I've written this really detailed outline, and I had done all this sort of concept art leading up to it. But when Andy and I actually signed, I only had about 50 pages of actual artwork done, of the 280. And in the end, I ended up actually scrapping probably about 45 of those 50 pages, because I just got so much better at drawing as I went that I redrew all of the early work. So it's very funny that with what I actually signed the contract based on is not actually in the book at all. So I'm really, really lucky. He had faith in the project, and he really wanted the project. And so he let me do that. Not many publishers would, almost no publishers would. So I did actually have plans to shop it around more publishers, and there was another one that was interested. But they were looking at it for a spring 2015 release, so it'll be coming out next year. And I really knew it was incredibly important to me that the book come out as soon as possible, because it's time sensitive. So within Canada, we're all of the last of the chemical photo booths that are left in places are going to be removed by the end of next summer, by summer 2015. So I really wanted the book to come out at least a year before that. So there was so that I could let people know, and it changed the tone of the book, because it's sort of this like, oh, there's still this chance to save them, rather than if the book came out after the fact, it would sort of be this official goodbye. So Andy was crazy enough and wonderful enough to work with me in such a last minute way. And I was actually working on the book until the day before I went to the printers. Yeah, which is not normal. the book was finished, but I just redrew images until I was satisfied and until my time ran out.
Until it escaped.
Yeah. I thought I was driving myself absolutely crazy. So it's actually a good thing it was taken away from me and printed, because I'd probably still be redrawing it if it wasn't.
Well, there are, okay, so 25,000 word treatment that you had written. So now for the 10th anniversary, you've got an annotated photo booth.
Yeah.
And then the 20th, you put in the extra pages.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, my original pitch too was for a 350-page book, I think. And he said, no, like, no one's going to buy that from a first-time author. You have to trim this down. So the original book actually did have more content. But I also got, like, I became a more concise storyteller as I learned the tricks of the trade, so.
Well, feel free to use Photo Booth and Autobiography as the title of the sequel.
Yeah.
Keep that.
Yeah, that may not be inaccurate.
That's just all yours. That's all yours. Just have that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Pete.
I like to help.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic book. I grabbed it from Strange Adventures. That's the name of the store, right? In Halifax.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite comic book shops in the whole wide world.
Yeah, they had it right on the shelf, right on the front counter, right by the cash register, and they jammed it into my hand.
good.
now on We Talk Comics, we do a in January we do an annual. We call them the Kryptonite Awards. I'm not gonna say for sure. There's a few months left in the year. I will tell you, your photo booth is definitely running ahead of the pack for my favorite graphic novel of the year.
Oh wow! Well, I'm very flattered to hear that. Thank you.
And
hopefully nothing new comes up between now.
It's. Well, Ray Fox has already published his graphic novel for this year. That was that was the stiffest competition, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But speaking of upcoming work, you're just announcing what your next project will be.
I'm working on a new project titled Long Red Hair, and it's an autobiographical work. And though just because I love history, I can never entirely leave it behind. So there are historical elements in it. And the book is about my childhood and my early teenage years. And it's about budding bisexuality and witchcraft, representations of witchcraft in popular culture. So it's very different from Photo Booth Biography. But I think readers will recognize the voice that it's coming from, and the subject matter is far more intimate. So I mean, if you liked the personal stuff in Photo Booth, then just wait for this. And I'm really excited for the production quality of it. It's going to be a really beautiful duotone print. And it's a smaller book, but I think it's going to pack a lot of punch. So, and that's actually going to be coming out in spring 2015. So, just next year.
And certainly with that title and the subject matter, you've got me thinking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Is that
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Buffy actually plays a really big role in this. Yeah, the book delves into a lot of sort of early to late mid-90s like pop culture, where there was sort of a big boom in film and television of witches and the supernatural and the occult. And so things like Buffy and the TV show Charmed and movies like The Addams Family and The Craft and Practical Magic and that sort of thing. So it talks about those influences on my life as a kid, while I was sort of navigating my identity and my sexual identity before I was a sexual person, if that makes sense.
that's fantastic. And when is it? Is there a rough release date for that right now?
Well, we're hoping to release it at TCAF, the Toronto Comics Arts Festival, in May. We may not be able to get the printing done before then because in true Meg's Fitzgerald fashion, we're going to be working on it until the last minute. So if it doesn't come out for them, then it'll come out at a festival shortly thereafter, but hopefully it comes out at TCAF.
And when you signed for that one, how many pages were you in and how many did you throw away?
I was 0 pages in, and
Way less to redraw that way.
yeah, way less to redraw. It's like embarrassing to admit this. No, I wrote a very detailed outline and script for it, and that's what my publisher and I signed based on. He knew that my artwork style would complement the story, and so he didn't need to see any finished pages for that. And so I think it's got a very beautiful cover, and hopefully that's enough to entice people to pick it up. I don't know if I can say if my own book has a very beautiful cover, but I like it, so.
If you aren't your biggest supporter, who's going to be? Always be your biggest
Oh,
fan.
my grandma. Oh, sure. Yes, sincerely.
Right, be second. If you're going to take second place, it has to then take second place to your grandma. But still,
Yeah.
I think my point still stands.
Do you, yeah, exactly. No, my grandma will love everything I do more than I do. So, I'm not so narcissistic. There's someone else who likes me more than me. Though it'll be interesting for her to read this new book. So, it's not every day that you decide to tell your immediate and extended family details about your sex life.
And you've included drawings and sketches to just to make it that much smoother.
Yes, well, I should say that it would be misleading to paint this book in any way erotic. It really isn't. It's about sexuality without being sexual. So there's actually only one kiss in the entire book, and that's the first time I had a French kiss with a boy. Something quite epic happened afterwards, which I don't want to tell you because it would spoil the story, but it's a very unromantic situation. So if anyone is reading this hoping to pick up, some like light erotica or something, they will be very sad. It's not that kind of book. It's mostly a tale of awkward woes strung together.
That's a great back cover disclaimer though.
Yeah.
Not a book about sex. There's one scene of sex. It's on page 58, and and it's nothing to write home about.
Yeah. Oh, and it's not even about sex. It's a French kiss. A French kiss that happened in front of my locker in grade 10. So that's as spicy as it gets.
This is not 50 Shades of Meg's.
No, definitely not. Yeah, that will have to be published after I die. Or after everyone else in my family is dead. Yeah.
Lock it up J.D. Salinger style. And
yeah, exactly. I wait 50 years after my death.
That's right. So it can come out with the 75th anniversary of Photo Booth.
Exactly. Yeah.
How do folks get a hold of a copy of Photo Booth? Because it is an amazing book, and they need to be ready for when your second book comes out.
Oh, thank you. The best way would be to find your local comic book shop and see if they stock it. Many in Canada do. And if the local comic book shop doesn't, then check out their local bookstores. And if they don't carry it, then go to a Chapters or Indigo. And if for some reason they are sold out, because it's in all the Indigos across Canada, then I would say turn to an online retailer. But always shop local first if you have the option.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us. And I want to talk to you again when your next book comes out.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode. We Talk Comics. I'm joined by, well, I'm going to get the gentleman to give his name himself.
Tiernan Trevelyan.
Tiernan Trevelyan.
Yep.
And hopefully towards the end here I'll be able to get that, though I'm not going to give you a guarantee.
Okay.
And you're the artist on Robbie Burns' Witch Hunter, and I have to say I'm very excited to talk to you. I'm happy that Alexander Finbow of Renegade Arts Entertainment Publisher set this up, because I had an opportunity to read this book, and I thought it was quite exceptional.
Right.
It is, and I'm not saying this simply because you're on the show, it is quite honestly maybe the best thing I've read this year. And I was a very big fan, so I'm really looking forward to this. But let's start off just talking a little bit about yourself. Why don't you explain to everybody your background a little bit, please?
Background. As far as comics goes, I'm fairly new to it, as in, I don't know, probably the last 5 years or so, really been doing comics properly. Previous to that, I've been working as an artist and illustrator in various. Bit of film work that occasionally. Always a difficult one. I've done a lot of stuff. I mean, but really decided at some point, you know, I need to focus my work. And what I really, you know, I've always been a comic fan, and I thought, let's do this and do it properly and see where we can go.
So you have always been a comic fan, then. What was it you were influenced by as you're growing up? You know, were you always wanted to do this, and you just weren't sure that you should pursue it? I mean, it's certainly not an easy thing to break into and make a living from.
No, certainly. That's possibly what put me off, maybe. You're going to be doing comics. You're not necessarily going to be doing it for financial gain. But
yes, trying to explain that to your parents. I'm going to become a comic book artist.
Yeah,
and I'll continue to live with you for the next 40 years.
Yeah. How about that? Yeah. Is that okay, Dad? You've got a funny color. What's that about? Yeah. 2000 AD initially. I remember I kind of fell out of love with comics at some point, then fell back into it with, I think I bought, it was Mobius, Jean Giraud. Mm-hmm. I got back into it through that, and then Anki Bilal and a lot of, European artists. And then later on, then people like Mignola and, these guys, they've been a huge influence, as well as, I guess, the artists that influenced them as well.
No, it seems to me, and perhaps it's just, I mean, I'm here in Canada, and certainly the North American, trying to get people to see that the comic books are a more varied medium than just the superhero.
Yeah, so the comic book, the nearest comic is, that mainly does superhero comics. There's a very limited range of anything else, and they kind of cover the basics, but you know, there's so, I don't know really. I mean, it's such a massive thing, isn't it? So it's.
I think the perception here of 2000 AD is that because of that book, that there is a more varied or accepting, view upon comic books here in England and in the European market. I mean, I've tried to,
Definitely.
Pardon me.
certainly the European market is certainly broader, I'd say, in that with regard to other titles other than, you know, the Marvel and DC and the imprints of those as far as, you know, superheroes go, and that sort of, that medium.
I've actually tried, and here, I mean, I've tried to do a show where we are, where we studied and read European comic books and have simply just compared the differences, and even getting my fellow co-host to go into that has been somewhat of a difficult. But I do think that a book like this is, I mean, perhaps that's one of the difficulties with Robbie Burns is how do you market this book? Yep. Who do you consider to be the target audience for this book?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
I know.
It's a difficult question as well. I think that's kind of partly what prompted the cover the way it is. I was quite keen to not do something generic and make it, you know, because you quite easily could have a, you know, tits and swords and demons and, you know, having a big old punch up. And
tits are okay. They're always good. Well,
of course. But, you know, it would not really, it would be a bit misleading, I think, for the nature of the book. The audience, yeah, again, that's difficult. I, you know, it's something I would pick up and look at is what I suppose that might sound a bit conceited, but I suppose that's kind of what I would consider. But I'm probably not the best person to ask that, really. Difficult.
Difficult. Okay.
Maybe a broader reader of comics, someone who likes the medium, not necessarily specifically just superhero comics or, you know, but someone who recognizes maybe comic books can tell any number of stories or tell any story, really.
Well, I really believe that it's the type of book that if you got it into the hands of people who normally wouldn't read a comic book or consider comic books to be a certain thing, they'd be pleasantly surprised. So let's get into the book a little bit more. For the uninitiated, and certainly in here where we are in North America, there are, I think, a group of people that literary students and such who are familiar with Robbie Burns, but I don't think he has quite the same cultural recognition as he perhaps does over in where you are. So who is Robbie Burns?
Robbie Burns is the Scotland's most famous poet, I suppose, is the best way to describe him. I mean, that's a question for Gordon and Emma, really, to talk about Robbie Burns with any real conviction. I know who he is. I'm aware of, you know, his work. It's not, you know, it would have been on the curriculum at school for Gordon and Emma, no doubt. And obviously, there's Burns Night, which, you know, is a far, you know, bigger thing in Scotland than it is here, though we do celebrate it. So, you know, it's, again, you and your difficult questions.
I'll try and lighten it up here a little bit. The concept of the book then, yeah, please.
It's kind of a rite of passage in a way, I suppose. It's really, for me, again, with the which is going back to the cover, which I wanted to express what I felt Gordon and Emma were writing, which to me was Robbie Burns is kind of, he's within the book anyway, he's very much a force of nature. He's kind of led around the place by his loins and his poetry. Yes. So,
well, I'm led around by one of those two things as well.
You probably make a rhyme up as well occasionally. Anyway, so yeah, he does become a witch hunter in the story, but that all in some ways that kind of doesn't touch the sides. He's driven, and that's why he succeeds in the end, because he's driven by his his poetry and his libido. So
that makes sense, and of course it's based on the Tam O'Shanter.
Yeah, the Tam O'Shanter. Yeah.
Yes. This, like I say, it's a very interesting concept. Kind of, as you say, it's this rite of passage to becoming this witch hunter. Did you study a lot of the look of Robbie Burns? Were you, at what point in time actually in the book did you come on? Let's start here. At what point did you come on to the creation of this book? How did you get involved?
I was working with Gordon on Absalom for 2000 AD. And very early on, I think, if not as soon as we'd kind of started, he said, I've got another project if you'd be interested. And I said, yes. and I liked the idea, and Gordon was writing, and Emma, and so, you know, it just seemed very solid.
The writers, Gordon and Emma, yeah. What can you tell me about them? What's their background, or you, obviously?
Background wise, I mean, certainly Gordon has been a very successful writer in other ways, not just the comics world. He's in particular the last few years has been everything he seems to be writing seems to be just really, really good. He's just sort of nailing it every time. That may be my opinion, I don't, you know, but they certainly seem to be popular. As far as their history goes, I shouldn't really tell you. I mean,
any recent works that they may have done that you can, obviously you mentioned 2000, Absalom with 2000 AD.
Well, he's often, at the minute, he's quite often got more than one story going on. We're currently doing another series of Absalom, which will be out next year. There's Aquila, which is, that's not running at the minute. What else has he done? Another one I can't pronounce.
Much like me and your name.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
I know what it is. When I look at it, I think, oh yeah, it's that. Great. But I don't know. If I say it to someone, I think it depends on it. What? No, I don't know how to say it. Leave it alone.
That's fine. Back to the book then. I'll try and dig you out here.
You sure?
So early on you came out to it. So how do you approach the look of the book? Because it has you mentioned Mignola, and certainly it has, two people who take it at first glance, they would see a similarity. Did you go back to the character design, the design of the witches, the demons, and these things, and how do you kind of approach it? Was it something that, or was there a lot of studying? Were you looking at the era a lot, or was it really left to your imagination?
Pretty much. I mean, obviously it's based very much in, you know, 18th century Scotland. So 17th century Scotland, sorry. And so, yeah, there was a certain amount of research with that. I mean, I've visited Scotland a little bit. So, you know, trying to approach the landscape, and the sense of light was kind of something I was attempting. I don't know how well I achieved it or not is another matter. But with Robbie, there were quite a few versions before we kind of got him right. I think we got him right anyway. You know, it's because obviously he has to have a similarity to Robbie himself. But he's a much younger Robbie Burns than we've ever seen, you know, a drawing of or whatever. So, and it also has to be, it's got to work within the genre, you know. So I think it started off, I can't quite remember. There were several versions before we kind of got him. We were all agreed that he kind of looked the way he should.
Now this is a graphic novel, obviously. How many pages in total was this again, of art that you did for it?
76, I think.
76, and how long were you working on it for?
It was off and on. So, yeah, I mean, if, you know, one could have done it at a straight run, you know, in a year easily, but we all had other work and other things, so it was kind of off and on. When did we start? It was about 3 years ago, I think.
Oh, wow.
I think we started it about 3 years ago. But it took a little while before we actually got the, you know, we got speed up. Gordon, and it took a while until Gordon had met Alexander and decided that was, he was the guy to do it.
Alexander, I know he pays you for the work as you turn it in, so that's a nice thing.
Well,
I'm certain for our artists.
But to be brutally honest, it wouldn't have happened otherwise, because other things come along and you just, you know.
Yeah, no, I think Renegade Arts, they have a very interesting I like their product line I like the way they go about things. Alexander's a good guy.
They're great to work with. So
yeah, absolutely. I think that they really are looking out for the creative side for the artists and the creators of the books. But enough, you know, he's probably not going to listen to this, so let's stop talking about him. Now, who are the other two main characters in the book?
There's Meg, who's like the assistant witch hunter in a way. Well, no, she's not assistant. That's kind of not quite right. She's a witch hunter in her own right, who's been brought up by old McKay, who's a vile old misanthrope. But brilliant because of that. Probably one of my favourite characters to draw in the book, to be honest. I didn't get bored of drawing him. This is interesting, actually, because Absalom, the other story I do with Gordon, also is the main character. Harry Absalom is a miserable old bastard. I'm just drawn towards drawing miserable old bastards.
Oh, I'm hoping one day people consider me a miserable old bastard. I'm looking forward to that.
Yep. Pretending to be deaf and hitting people with your stick. Perfect.
Oh, it's tremendous, tremendous. You know, I already yell at kids to get off my lawn, so it's okay.
You haven't even got a lawn, have you?
Actually, Meg to me is a very interesting character as well. There's a page, actually, that I think it's about midway through the book. I think page 47, if memory holds. And she's talking to Robbie, and there's at the bottom, there's a part where he's kind of standing a little bit beside her to the right, just a little bit behind her. And she's kind of standing, you know, taking center stage in the panel at the bottom. It's about the bottom third. I'm not sure if you know which page I'm talking about.
I don't know, not off the top of my
head. No, it's too bad, because she simply just radiates sexiness, you know, in there. So, tell me a little bit more about Meg and drawing her.
I remember there was sort of back and forth between the three of us with getting her right. I was a little disappointed. I got the drawing, I did a sketch, sort of I think the third sketch in, and I was really happy with it. And I never quite got it right again.
Well, you got it right in this panel if you don't know it.
Right. I wanted to make her look, she obviously has to be sexy. Robbie is obviously completely, you know, besotted with it. I didn't want to make her too stereotypical. It's kind of difficult. I found that's quite challenging.
What do you mean stereotypical?
Well, stereotypically completely beautiful,
yes.
In a comic book sense, you know, totally symmetrical and sort of perfect.
A Rob Liefeld character, yeah. You didn't want to do that.
No, and I, you know, so, but on the other hand, it's difficult, you know, so I whether that, but you... You look like the character, so that maybe worked, didn't it?
No, I think she does. As I say, she radiates a certain sexiness and charm. You can see why it is that Robbie Burns is drawn to her, both from the way she's written and the way that she appears in the book. That's and great. I think that's really great. Now, how about some of the villains? That's where you. I mean, I'm guessing you just got a chance to open up your somewhat twisted little mind and go crazy. Yep.
Interestingly enough, they actually closed my twisted little mind at one occasion.
Really? Now that's a story I must hear.
The main demon, who is you know, the big red thing, big kind of purpley red guy. Initially, what I was going, I wanted to do something a bit more bosh, something a bit more almost biblical. and rather than necessarily, you know, the horned, you know, huge behemoth of a, you know, sort of almost Satan-looking creature. I did want to make some sort of slightly goat-headed thing with just a vile, twisted form that was, you know, or something just with a revolting beak and huge eyes and, you know, that sort of Bosch thing, you know, shitting birds and Christ knows what. Just some sort of something so otherworldly that you just cannot quite understand it, if you see what I mean. Visually, it would just be terrifying because you have no concept of it in a way. But I think that was probably going to be misleading, to be honest, if I'd been let loose with
and
that.
Perhaps it would have been the most fun to draw, but man, not the best serving of the story.
Yeah. He's just serving my twisted imagination, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so that one, that was put back. But the others, I enjoyed doing all the witches and the sort of semi, you know, the witches that are half, sort of slightly turned into demons a bit and, you know, kind of this sort of gaggle of folk with, you know, gaunt and betoothed and a little bit of horns and, you know.
Now, if this book takes off, is there any plans? I mean, it certainly is based upon one of his poems and, but, it leaves itself and seems to be kind of open-ended so that it could go elsewhere. I mean, the way that, and I have to say, the way that this book ties in with his poetry, even to someone like who may not be as familiar with it, I think it really does a good job of explaining it. And then, of course, there's the bit at the end with his biography and everything, but
yeah.
Just explaining kind of his influence. I mean, both for people who are fans and for people who aren't familiar with him. But, yeah, is there any other plans with Robbie Burns, do you think?
I don't know, to be brutally honest. I don't know. I, to begin with, I thought we were going to do another story within the book. But that I might be imagining that. I thought that might have been the case.
Sounds like you'd love to return to the universe.
Yeah, could be fun. I mean, it entirely depends on whether there's a demand for it and whether Gordon and Emma have another story to tell or want to tell another story with it. That's kind of where it lies, I think.
All right. Well, let me give you, let's give you a chance to give the ultimate pitch for the book. How would you, what would you say to somebody who's listening to this right now? I mean, I'd say them, as I say, I think it's among the best things, perhaps the best thing I've read this year. It completely caught me. I mean, Alexander said to me he really liked it. It's a very good book, and he didn't oversell it to me. So I went into it thinking, oh, I always try and go into something open mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, by about the fifth page, I'd say sixth page,
yeah,
I was completely just taken in. And right. A lot of that is your artwork. I mean, it's very what you set the mood of the book and the characters very well. And I imagine that's probably one of the most difficult things to do.
It was very much but that was the focus, really, I suppose, for me to get those things. It was kind of almost in the back of my mind as soon as Gordon approached me with the idea. And it was very much, I had a palette in mind already, you know, for the colors and so forth. And
the colors in this book are absolutely key.
The changing weather, being in Scotland, you get, you know, if you spend any time there, you realize as you get all weather, kind of particularly sort of the higher up you go, you kind of get all different elements of weather every day almost. It felt like that to me anyway, whenever I visited, you know. And I wanted to try and put that across without making, obviously that could come across as a bit random, but that was very much in my mind.
So the ultimate pitch for the book, why should people read this?
It's got boobs in it.
It does.
I don't know.
It certainly helps sell it to me. It's early on, folks. Boobs early on. That's where you want them.
Yep. Yeah, we're not mucking about. These witches have boobs, and they're happy to show them. Yeah, I think I was pulled back on the boobs at some point as well. I think another that sort of box. I think I was asked to go back into that one. I think that was the Cutty Sark. I think she, when I first did sketches of her, I think she was mostly kind of bare-breasted, but obviously because the Cutty Sark is a short nightdress sort of thing, and so she's got to be wearing one of those. So,
well, you can always hope for the sequel and just go in and fix that.
Yeah, of course.
But again, one more try.
You actually want me to try and pitch this, but that's not the sort of thing. I can't do that. What can I say? It's I know you do it. You've read it.
I've read it. I really think it's a book that, as I say, I think it's a book that you can put in the hands of somebody who is not a fan of comic books.
Yep.
And they will enjoy it. They will. It is perfectly paced. The art is exceptionally sets the mood, and it is extremely well thought out. In its presentation, it's a really, really, really good book. I think you should be very proud of it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys do next. I'm definitely going to be following your careers from now on and seeing what it is and looking for some twisted things coming from you.
Another thing about Emma was one of the first female writer to write on Judge Dredd, I believe.
Oh, excellent.
That's right. So, yeah.
And is there anything coming up, anything else coming up you want us to know about?
Well, there's Absalom in 2000 AD, obviously. That's coming out in May. Starting in May next year, maybe sooner, not sure. I'm working on that currently. I, as always, have some of my own projects, which when and if I have enough time, then I might get them to a point where I might actually be able to present them to someone. But they just might be too deranged. Who knows? It's me to judge.
Do you ever see yourself doing the writing as well? Writing and
I wouldn't say I was a writer so by any stretch of the imagination, but I think I can tell a story. I think I've got a couple of stories, and let's see. I usually work with someone else on these things of my own, so I usually kind of write something and get to a certain stage with it, and then take it to a guy I've been working with off and on various things. And kind of pass it over to him, and he says, he'll just say, oh, have you thought of this? So, oh, of course, and that makes sense. Instead of what I've written, which is this here, this bit, this makes no sense whatsoever. So, you know, let's see. Maybe something may happen next year, don't know. All too early to say.
All right, terrific. Well, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to try and pronounce the name Tiernan Trevelyan. Yep.
Trevelyan. Yeah.
Trevelyan. It's an old college try, at least, that I gave. And thank you very much. Robbie Burns Witch Hunter is going to be available November 26th, I believe.
Yep, that's right.
If that's correct. And, of course, there's a kickoff party in Scotland. Alexander invited me to it, but I do believe that, unfortunately, it may be more than far away from me to make it in my car quickly.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think I may or may not be able to make it, but due to time and everything. But yeah, hopefully I will.
And hopefully that this is the type of book that people have to certainly they'll have to probably maybe perhaps visit the Renegade Arts and Entertainment website or ask their comic book store to get it in. I know it's.
They should definitely do. They should do both of those things.
They should do both of those things, and also, I mean, I think this is the type of book that should be. I would like to see people. I would love to see this taken to the streets. I'd love to see this taken to universities and high schools and places where people are studying literature and studying and maybe familiar with Robbie Burns and see magazines that are poetry magazines and magazines that aren't necessarily even comic books, because I think it has a lot of that crossover appeal. And hopefully people will pick up on it.
Certainly what Gordon and Emma did, I think what they achieved is quite a thing, actually, to be able to so convincingly put that across, make that, turn this. I know it's been done on a few occasions with characters, historical character, stroke, witch hunter, stroke, demon hunter, stroke, whatever it might be. But this just seems to be in their writing. There was just a great deal more conviction, I felt. Yeah,
I think so. You know, it's, I almost wonder, and this sounds odd, but a book like this, when they hear Robbie Burns, Witch Hunter, you know, I just wonder if people go, oh, the poet? Oh, that sounds, you know,
yeah.
How do I approach this? Or poetry is dry. My customers won't read that. Maybe you should have just called it Witch Hunter, Robbie Burns, and that would have fixed the whole thing.
Possibly. We did think, there was a thing. We did think about how to put the title on, because that's why Witch Hunter ended up being much larger on the front.
So just ignore the Robbie Burns part. Concentrate on the Witch Hunter if you are a fan of Gothic literature or Walking Dead. I think fans will enjoy this. Anybody who reads the Mignola universe, I think they'll have a lot of fun with this. It's a really good book, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.